Hi, and welcome to the Handbag Designer 101 podcast with your host, Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, where we cover everything about handbags from making, marketing, designing, and talking to handbag designers and industry experts about what it takes to make a successful handbag. Welcome, Charlotte Sturck, to Handbag Designer 101, the podcast. Charlotte, you are co-founder and CEO of The Handbag Clinic, the only place to go in the UK for everything handbag before, during, and after. Would that be correct to assume?
Yeah, that's a good summary.
Yes, it is the full life cycle of a handbag within the UK. I am so stoked to have this conversation just because what you've accomplished being such an early adopter to the life cycle of a handbag. Like, I just want to dive right in because right now the ecosystem of where handbags is at, it must feel really good that you were able to capitalize on it before people realize that they want to get their hands on used, labeled brand bags. So do you want to like just dive right into the origin story that is Charlotte?
Yeah, of course. So yes, Handbag Clinic, as we know it today, has been operating since 2015. Prior to that, it was an offshoot from another business that still makes our products that we use in our clinic today. So it went from kind of being, you know, people who were requesting sofas to be fixed would request for the handbags to be fixed. And then that was sort of two artisans. And then I joined the business to take it into where we are today, which was retail stores, a large clinic where we have 15 artisans now, and we work on hundreds and hundreds of bags every single month. And in the UK, we have the largest collection of pre-owned handbags available to shop on, you know, next day service. It's pre-owned that feels like brand new. And yes, very much I was, people used to ask, well, why do you do that with old bags? Or what do you do with old bags?
And now before, like, before they knew, because you knew.
Yeah, exactly. We knew. And I mean, I bought and sold bags from being 16 on eBay. So
how did that all start? I mean, 16, were you a labels girl? Were you like, you know, where did that love for high fashion handbags come from? Because it always has to come from someone.
I honestly don't know. I am the only person in my family like this. I just always like nice things. And I really liked handbags. When I was very young, I was given a embroidered handbag and it had a label inside, obviously just from like, it would have been from sort of a market stall or something when I was about 6 or 7. And I was getting teased in the playground for it. They were like, why have you got a handbag for school?
And you were, you wearing a school uniform that you had made, like, fabulous with a handbag.
Exactly. And I flicked it over my shoulder and said, it's designer, and walked
good
off.
So, good for you, Charlotte.
Yeah, I've just always been obsessed with bags, but I couldn't really ever have afforded labels ever. It just wasn't, you know, in our reach at all. But what I did was I started working as soon as I could start working, and I saved up with the first money that I got in that I'd earned from a part-time job as a retail assistant. I walked straight over and bought a DKNY handbag. And then I managed to buy another one. And then I sold those on eBay. And then I would buy bags, and I'd work my way up what I call the handbag ladder. So I would buy, you know, Luella and DKNY, and then I worked my way up to a Mulberry bag, which in the UK is, you know, huge for
us. It's the pinnacle.
Yeah, and now I own Hermes, so, you know, I've climbed the ladder to the top.
You created the ladder.
Yeah, exactly. So it really just came out of a need for me to do that, because it was the only way I could see myself getting hold of these bags that I wanted so desperately. And then obviously in time, it became part of, you know, once I launched this professionally, the sustainability impact just became bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the world caught up to us, really.
Can I ask you something? Because this is like, I'm so digging this. Were you one of those girls that had a backpack and a fancy bag for school?
No.
How did you carry your books?
I would figure it out. I would not.
Would you like hold your books at a principal and a fancy bag? Because God forbid you be seen with like a backpack. Like, how pleb of that? So you were one of those, like you'd rather slap your stuff.
I think it was just, it was more for me, it was like a fashion conscious thing, not as much of a sort of a pleb thing. It was just like, that's what, how I wanted to be viewed with this nice handbag. And I don't know, I've just, I probably did commit the cardinal sin of overloading handbags with school books and things. And
yeah,
there's lots of times that I'd spilt water bottles inside and things, which are all things that Handbag Clinic can fix now, which kind of where the adoption of the business, like the growth of the business came from. Because I would kind of, before I committed full wholeheartedly in 2015 and was like, let's, you know, go for this fall, right, I would say, you know, I had this problem with a handbag. What can we do? How can we fix this? Is this something that we could work on and help to create those products and services before we kind of launched them out fully as well? Because I'm a customer of Handbag Clinic like everybody else.
I think you need to be. I think, look, in this day and age, I mean, I speak about this ad nauseum about having to have this intimate understanding of who your customer is, from what they have for breakfast to the car they drive to, you know, their priorities in terms of what they're doing with their disposable income, right? And you being this like key demographic of understanding this customer, of saying like, wow, she will save all her money just to have this one bag because this one bag is such an important part of her life. And what does that mean for her emotionally? And then, you know, it really comes down to what she defines a want versus a need and what she's going to spend her money on. I would love to talk to you about a few things, the learning of authentication. And then you had said about like, you obviously had day jobs before you fell into this. Like, were you day jobbing and then you saw your husband with a furniture clinic and then you were like, little by little, I could just drop my bag off to get it fixed. And then people were asking you, like, what's this whole story that got you to the handbag clinic, at least at the beginning?
Well, I worked as a professional buyer for our NHS. So I studied in buying. All of my qualifications are in buying, but not for handbags. I always dreamt of being a fashion buyer. And when I was about 20, I do remember saying, I was, I mean, you've got them in America. We do pageants, you know, here and very much more on a smaller scale. And I stood saying that, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And
you were in a pageant?
Many years ago.
Like, oh my God, for what?
Just, it's like in, like the same as you guys have, like Miss whatever.
That's amazing. Did you wear one of your pageant dresses for your wedding?
No, and we, like, it's very different here. It is like, so no, it's no any of the same. We got, you get given the dresses to wear and it's just like a little night. It's no way the American scale.
So you weren't wearing lashes at like 6 years old?
No, I was like, I was like 19 probably when we did that. You've got to be like over 16, I think.
Okay.
But no.
That's brilliant.
I know. But I stood on the stage and I said that that's what I would wanted to do. But at the time, I just, you know, I was so far away from that. I worked, you know, dealing with waste services. And I actually worked in the waste industry for a long time. And, you know, it's so strange because when you think about it, you know,
that's,
I was in the waste industry. Yeah, I worked in, you know, buying things. So while I was doing all of this, I was saving up and buying bags and selling things on eBay and, you know, had this love of handbags going on in the background. And I actually, when I was 18, before I met my husband nearly 3 years later.
My God, you were so young.
Yeah, when I, well, you know, when you wear your jeans and your handbag rubs on your jeans and it creates dye transfer.
Right.
I had a cream bag and that happened to it and I was devastated. And my boss at the time said, hey, I've seen this van driving around, it says leather repair on it, why don't you give them a call? And she gave me a post-it note with the number on, and I found out years later that it was my husband to be's business, because they fixed sofas and they
created
leather products. So when we met 3 years later, I had no idea. And it's just really strange because we met in 2010, and you know, the increase in people asking for these, you know, people saying, oh, my handbag has the same problem. So I kind of encouraged for this department to be set up that was dedicated to handbags. While I did obviously my day job, I was very loosely sort of involved in any of the day to day. But as I say, I would be like a customer saying, well, you know, for example, by that point, I'd managed to buy a pair of Louboutins. And I said, the red soles come off straight away as soon as you wear them. Like, what can we do about that?
Right.
And, you know, we worked on the product to get those moving. And then by 2015, it was like, you know, we could actually make this a shop. However, if you're going to have a shop, you need to sell something in that shop.
Right.
And it just made so much sense to sell pre-owned handbags. And there weren't very many people in the UK at all doing it at that
right.
point. It was more your sort of thrift shops, your vintage stores,
your charity stores.
So it was a very organic sort of growth to taking that plunge. And at the time, it was like, what do I want to do? Buy Chanel handbags or buy knee replacements? And I mean, it was obvious at that point.
I mean, that's really hard to decide if you ask me. I don't know. One is really sexy over the other. Did you ever have any experience buying a handbag that you realized after the fact was a fake? I'm sure that had happened to you.
Yeah, that happened to me for sure on, you know, the likes of eBay. So I've always been conscious of the authenticity of items because of shopping pre-owned for so long. But right. I was so fortunate that when we started the handbag clinic, because the repair element had built up over around 2 years by this point, I'd had so much exposure to handbags and all sorts of kinds and types and ages that
right.
normally would not get hold of because it would be people sending bags in for repairs. So
right.
I was able to start really cataloging what meant it was real, what didn't. You know, I didn't have to.
Were you keeping detailed notes of this? Like, this is for a Chanel bag for this particular style. You know, this is what the numbers start with in the interior, the numbers and the code.
I can tell you the age of a handbag by what zips in it. Like a Chanel. If you show me a zip, I'll give you a rough age, like down to that level of detail. You've got to. So, you know, that was all cataloged and put together. And, you know, I would spend hours and hours and hours of going through these handbags for repair until we sort of started building traction on the resale side. And now, I mean, we authenticate, tens of thousands of bags. It's, a lot of bags that we authenticate all of the time because we offer an authentication service as well as selling through us as well.
Just out of curiosity, if your husband was driving a truck that said leather repair, was that a family business that he took over that he decided that, hey, let's have a truck drive around for services for promotion?
So his father sold on a market stall a leather cleaner and a leather protector. So especially in the area where from in Newcastle in the northeast of England, there's a very famous market and he would sell this leather cleaner and protector on there. And my husband saw him doing that and thought, you know what, you could sell these online, and created a website to sell those online. And now Furniture Clinic make every product for furniture you could imagine it's in the US. It's like a huge, big business now selling wood product, leather product, everything. But we still work super closely with them to develop our product. So we have a special research and development team who will work with the chemists over at Furniture Clinic to make sure, for example, lambskin leather on Chanel's is one. When you restore leather, there can be texture implications.
Right.
And we work with them to create a product that it reduces that as much as possible so that if you are getting Chanel lambskin repaired, it stays as soft as it physically can.
Mm.
We also work with them on like specialist dyes and specialist things, everything that we need in our clinic, basically. So it's both businesses have kind of taken off in different directions, and he does the furniture product side and still helps us. Well, his chemists help us, but I am fully handbag clinic because I am a customer, as I say.
This is so fascinating. So honestly, without him having the foresight with his own father saying like, hey, you're doing this such on a small scale, we can do so much more. And then you get involved and saying, hey, you're doing this on such a small scale, we could do so much more. This is so incredible. Having purchased skins myself to make handbags, this is such an interesting narrative. Do you think like designers should be investing in this material to pre-code or protect the leathers before they even sell them?
Yeah, like protection is how you make a handbag last. Protection and ongoing maintenance. If you like We do like demos with staff. So what I tend to do is I'll get a small strip of leather. I will protect one half of it and not protect the other. And then we'll tell them to scribble all over it with a biro pen. And then the side that's been protected will clean off. And the other side, obviously not ruined because it can be repaired.
Right,
but,
right, right.
You know, it's going to cost you a lot more money to have it repaired by one of our experts. You have to do a bespoke color match, have to use the right products and pigments and go through all of that process. When if it had just been protected, you could have cleaned it at home. And it really does make the difference. It is my number one thing. I will preach for forever about protecting and regular cleaning, especially of handles. Or wipe them down all of the time, reprotect them, and your bags will last so much longer. I never need to book my bags in the clinic, proudly, even though, yeah, because I just make sure that I look after them when I get them. So yes, it is a really important part.
If you ever wanted to start a handbag brand and didn't know where to start, this is for you. If you had dreams of becoming a handbag designer but aren't trained in design, this is for you. If you have a handbag brand and need strategy and direction, this is for you. I'm Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, and this is the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. Over the next 10 classes, I will break down everything you need to know to make, manufacture, and market a handbag brand, broken down to ensure that you will not only skip steps in the handbag building process, but also to save money to avoid the learning curve of costly mistakes. For the past 20 years, I've been teaching at the top fashion universities in New York City, wrote the Handbag Designer Bible, founded the Handbag Awards, and created the only Handbag Designer podcast. I'm going to show you, like I have countless brands, to create in this in-depth course from sketch to sample to sale, whether you're just starting out and don't even know where to start or begin, or if you've had a brand and need some strategic direction, the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass is just for you. So let's get started, and you'll be the creator of the next it bag. Join me, Emily Blumenthal, in the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. So be sure to sign up at emilyblumenthal.com/masterclass and type in the code podcast to get 10% off your masterclass today.
The fascinating thing is that people don't, I mean, for better or for worse, when you're buying leather, it's a skin like any other skin, like the skin on our bodies. It wears, it ages, it, you know, like there's wear and tear. But the beautiful thing about the skin is that the oils from your hands, it will actually, you know, make a product look that much more loved, which in certain particular materials, like the original Coach bags, which at least here in America, historically, if you went to any flea market or, you know, vintage store, the bags that you are most likely to see are these original Coach bags before it was sold to Sara Lee when they were using baseball glove mitts, which those can last a lifetime because the leather was like, you know, everything was made in the USA. They had production in Florida, like they had the biggest factory in Florida. That's all gone now, of course. But in terms of the quality of the skins, everything has been diluted year after year after year because, you know, things get mass. People want price decreases. The quality always goes down. So there's this massive spread of what things cost, especially in leather, which I'm sure you can speak to. How come you never, with all this, never thought to create your own brand to go? I mean, you have the capacity. Just said, or were you like, hell no, I don't even want to.
I'm just not a designer. I know what looks good, but I'm not the person to create that. It's just not in my skill set. I work well with, you know, obviously the authentication I've always naturally taken to, analyzing the price points, making sure we're selling things at the right price point. But an actual crafting and designing and manufacturing process is so different. And our processes are like, no 2 days are the same. Whereas obviously if you have something where you're putting out 50 to 50,000 units of something, you know, it's a very linear process. Whereas I kind of thrive in the chaos of what we do because it's,
right,
you know, something's in and it's white and it's going to go black. Something's in and it's getting fully restored. Something's in, it's getting a new lining. And like, there's always this, like, something different happening every single day. And that's just so much more me.
Yeah, that is buzzy. And I must say, it's smart. Because as you know, with the cycle of bags coming in and out and trends, like, to get involved with that, it's like, wow, that's a whole other business right there.
Yeah, it's a really difficult market. And, you know, with the powerhouses of the brands themselves, you know, the big, big brands that do right. so well, it's so hard to break through. And, you know, we've seen brands like Jacquemus and other brands kind of start to really break into that. And we see it transcend into the pre-owned market. You know, we've seen when we first started doing this, Tom Ford was a brand that we would sell quite frequently. We yeah. very rarely get a Tom Ford in anymore, but right. we get lots of Jacquemus. We've obviously seen the rise of Loewe. I really enjoy that trend spotting piece from a kind of, you know, being part expert, of a market right. yeah, that already exists around us.
I want to talk a little bit about that in terms of trends and so forth, and in terms of bags, and if you dare even feel comfortable talking about it, because I don't want to make you talk about anything you don't feel good about. What bags have you seen, or certain silhouettes or so forth, of which brands have you typically seen the ones that come in the most, that you're the least surprised, that you're like, yep, here it is again?
I mean, the volumes that come through to us now are, you know, I don't see everything that comes through every day. We have a team of buyers that I've personally trained, and however, when I do kind of browse the website, you know, we are seeing a rise. I mean, we have the classics. It's always going to be the classics. It's going to be your classic Chanels. It's going to be your classic Louis Vuitton models, you know, your Neverfulls, your Speedies. But these are bags that are made to be timeless. And I think it's great that we see them pass through the pre-owned market. Mm-hmm. The bags that I look at and I go, how long are you going to last? Are things like the Bottega Jodi bag, you know, that tiny small with the knot. I feel like yeah. we, at one point, we would put those on the website and they would fly out in minutes. And now you see them hanging around a little bit longer because they're just not the most practical bag and they are a high price point. We've definitely seen a shift in, obviously, the Hermes market. In 2016, we would have a Kelly for weeks before it would sell, and you'd get a Birkin 35 and it would leave the next day. Now, those roles have totally reversed with the trend of going from larger bags to smaller bags. You know, you see that trickle through into our market, and sometimes it really hits with a bang. That the Kelly switch from a larger size to a smaller size just was overnight.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it was really fast. It was really, really fast with that brand.
Within new designers creeping in, are you seeing any new talent of brands beyond Jacquemus and so forth, of like independent designers or designers that you're like, hey, here's some that you should look out for because they've come to your clinic that people are starting to want to get their hands on?
No, not hugely, not more independent things. We do see smaller brands come through, and we do see trends move through those smaller brands through our clinic, even if we don't kind of buy and sell them, but there's none that are really jumping out to me. We did have the JW Anderson trend a few years ago, and that definitely has sort of dropped off now. It's more this resurgence of your Loewe's. And I think Miu Miu, we now, you know, Miu Miu is quite a, even though it won brand of the year last year, it's not really made it into the bags yet. They're one if bag away from being huge again. And it'll be really interesting to see when that changes.
That's so interesting in terms of Miu Miu. And, you know, obviously Miu Miu is tied to
Prada. Yes.
Exactly. So a lot of people don't even know that. So when they speak about that, you know, like in recognizing one versus the other and realizing that the trends of one, how the brand is so totally designed, is like almost night and day, that you wouldn't even know that they were related.
Yeah, it is. People never ever know that link.
So,
oh, sorry, I think there's a connection.
I just want to talk a little bit about the evolution of trends post-COVID that you've seen in terms of bags that you've seen coming in. I know novelty within the past couple years has really seen an uptick. As you said, smaller bags, obviously the Jacquemus bag that holds nothing, but it's still the bag that if you want to be seen carrying, it's definitely a talking piece. Can you talk a little bit about like trends of bags that you've seen in terms of sizes or silhouettes that you think are on their way out or on their way in, just based on what you see from the website and coming through the clinic?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously we had a huge boom of 90s themes coming through with the Prada nylons, the small pochettes, the Gucci boat pochette and Dior pochette, and obviously the Louis pochettes as well. And I think people have kind of realized that they're not the most practical bag. So what I think we'll have is an elevation of that pochette. So a shoulder bag that fits a little bit more in, that is almost crescent moon in shape is going to really rise. And then we're also definitely seeing a trend move towards, which is a little bit, obviously we've had quiet luxury, which was, yeah, let's not scream about the brands, let's not be covered in logos. But I think people miss that element of glamour. Yeah. And I think that that's going to come back in with kind of studs and chains and this really impactful kind of detailing on bags.
Like, I mean, the Alexander Wang bag from 2014, 15, the one that had the studs all at the bottom.
Yeah, the Rocco and the Diego.
Yeah,
those types of bags we may see come through. I think, you know, we're seeing it already with the Loewe chain bag that they have. Looks, though, anything with that, I think you'll see a rise, which will do really well for some of the old, more vintage Gucci pieces, because they tended to go for those really big, chunky metalworks and Versace and brands like that, that tended to go for that chunkier look. I think that we'll definitely see a rise in those, and anything as a crescent moon shape. A Jackie's probably a little too square, but a kind of condensed version of that.
It's so funny because I contributed to an article, a couple articles recently for Women's Wear for two different, actually one of the writers is out of the UK, and I was saying the exact same thing. To the T. So it makes me feel good that at least I'm on trend as per what you're saying, because obviously you deal with this more on a day-to-day than I do, because I'm in it, but peripheral. I'm not going in seafield touching. Is it interesting for your craftsmen to deal with materials that aren't leather, like the nylon bags, the coated nylon? I mean, was that something that, obviously a craftsperson is a craftsperson, but was that something that needed to be added on?
No, we've always seen a huge range of, you know, everything come through our clinic. We've worked on everything from unbranded bags to the most expensive Hermes Birkin crocodile skins to, I don't know, backgammon sets and boxing gloves. Like, it's so vast what we've done.
Right.
But we are restricted on your suedes and your fabrics. With leather, we can create magic. We can change its color. We can remove a stain. We can... We definitely, in COVID, it's really bad. Actually, we saw a lot of dogs chewing bags, and even in
just people got a lot of dogs.
Yeah, people got a lot of dogs. But also we saw where arguments escalated and handbags became the victim, and there was knives put through handbags and all sorts of crazy things.
That's amazing.
And with those, we can fix it. But if it is fabric and if it is suede, you are going to struggle. And they are the bags that you have to protect. And you have to clean regularly and be careful where you use them, because if they go, they're way harder to save and sometimes impossible to save.
Suede is the devil's work of material. I always say, like, run, run, run. I mean, the first collection I did had I did a handful of them in suede, and they were beige. And let the record stand that never do a beige suede bag ever. Because by the time it gets to the store to resell your bag, one stain on it or from one person touching it, you're going to get the charge back as the designer saying, sorry, this is unsellable. So I say run for the hills with that one.
Yeah, it is a shame because it's beautiful. But
it's so lovely, but like, you're going to have to walk around with it like that, not to touch it. One final question. In terms of, you know, obviously being an expert within this market, how do you deal with reselling bags at a retail price point when they go up and down in terms of demand? So how do you deal with that, saying, okay, there's less of this, more people want it, I know I can jack up the price. Now there's so many of them, we're lowering the price purely out of supply and demand. How do you deal with that?
So we created bespoke software back in 2019, which tracks the sort of how long a bag will sit on our website versus the general market, whether the RRP increases as well, because obviously when an RRP, you know, Chanel increased their prices, that will
affect. And what does that mean, just in case?
The retail price, basically. So what Gucci, Chanel, Louis Vuitton will sell their bags at, they will increase that and sort of anywhere from 1 to 3 times a year. And our software actually looks at that, so it will flag to our buyers, who also are trend focused, trend spotting, always looking ahead, and it will flag to them, you know, we are seeing a real increase in demand, and it's all based on supply and demand.
Right.
We go for a sort of trend, a data-led point, with that human overlay, looking from a trend point of view. So saying, you know, I mean, there's one that will always bite me, which is the Dior saddlebag, because we didn't have the software or anything then. And there was just kind of me buying handbags, and we couldn't sell a Dior saddlebag for anything.
Years, I bet.
So, yeah, it took so long. And we used to buy them for £150 max, £150. And then once they were in that runway show, they went up overnight. Yep. And to over £1,000. And I just wish I'd scooped them all up at that point in time.
Oh,
but
my God.
It's always one that will bite me. But yeah, we do it very data-led. We have very smart systems. And we're actually working with a local university to create AI software that will allow us to improve that as well. Because what we really want to do is we want to create a fair price for the pre-owned market. So it isn't just what somebody on, you know, is selling their bag for on a marketplace, or it isn't what one brand picks. This is looking at the overall market and sell-through rates and clear demand from these people, and making sure that we get a fair price for our pre-owned items. Because you see, I mean, some of them just...
It's outrageous. Yeah.
I've seen Chanel bags for £21,000 on some of these sites, and I'm like, come on. Like, it's just not possible. So that's really at my mission, because I'm somebody who loves bags, and I would never have had access to this level of bags without the pre-owned market.
Yep.
So I want to make sure that it's fair and transparent for everybody.
Yeah. No, I think that's amazing, especially since COVID, there was obviously a dip in demand, right? Nobody wanted to buy bags as much. And then the uptick of the pre-owned market just started to come up. Right, where people are like, why should I buy a new one? I could buy an old one. So I'm sure if you were like, this is an odd spike considering no one's going out. And then to have this issue with cargo and ships and so forth, with the clog of the boats, of them getting to the ports, which led to the backlog in supply. And then people were getting bags in and products that were like two seasons old because it was delayed. And then to have the material prices go up. So a Chanel bag that was $3,000 is now like $15,000 or something. It's a lot of work on your end to keep up with, in terms of like, okay, well, what are we charging it today, considering they're now charging their retail three times higher? So that obviously, I mean, you are so ahead of the curve to have the capacity to be like, you know, the one to watch in terms of what pricing for these items really should be. That's amazing.
Yeah, we, as I say, when we created the software, it was very basic, but we've relaunched it again this year with a new version, and we are looking for all, you know, improvements. And we also want it super easy. We don't want customers to have to upload a load of photos and tell us a load of information. You know, it all works super quick, super fast. And that's, you know, what we want the difference to be, really, and to set a precedent for the pre-owned market, that if you're going to use a reseller, it should be so easy, so quick, and a fair price.
Was this your idea? Were you like sitting with your husband? You're like, we need a software. I can't do this anymore. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, because I was just surrounded by paper and the demand was creeping up. And at this point, there was me, and I'd employed one other buyer to work with me, and I'd started training them. And the demand was just getting out of control.
Were you just like going through stacks, like, well, what was that sold? And do you have it on that spreadsheet? And what did we charge it for the last time? And just like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was exactly it.
Look at you. Charlotte, this has been enlightening. I'm so happy we connected. Thank you for entertaining my LinkedIn messages saying we need to chat. This is going to be amazing. Our audience is going to go bananas over this. How can, and I'm assuming you deal with the international market because you will so much more after this, how can one learn about the handbag clinic, sell their pre-owned bag, buy a pre-owned bag, get their bag fixed? How does all that work? Tell us, please.
So we are at handbagclinic.co.uk. We also are on all social media, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, which is the Handbag Clinic. Look for the pink round logo, and that is us.
Fabulous. Charlotte, I can't wait. Definitely going to be in touch. I'm going to make sure everybody sends their bags to you, because obviously that's where they should go, with your fast authentication and fair pricing. Thank you so very much for being part of the Handbag Designer 101 podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and review and follow us on every single platform at Handbag Designer. Thanks so much. See you next time.